Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. I buy the generic brand.
I do not eat cereal.
Oh, okay, you eat muesli in the morning?
No. This morning for breakfast, I had two fried eggs on top of a tortilla.
So, huevos rancheros.
Well, real fake huevos rancheros. More like not ranch eggs is what I had.
So. Okay.
Because I didn't have any sauce. I didn't.
You didn't have any tomatillo salsa?
I didn't have time to really. It's a miracle that I got the eggs fried, and I screwed up the second one anyway.
Okay.
So.
Well, this weekend I made my typical sort of hash browns with eggs in them. Kind of, it's very similar to something called the heap that the Thumbs Up Diner
serves. Oh yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah. I just whatever.
Junk I'll do potato and eggs or rice and eggs, where you fry the starch and then you throw the scrambled eggs on top of that and then cook it up. It's great.
And I'll either put rosemary or a lot of sort of Mexican seasonings.
So, are we hungry, or was it just that the standard sound check of what did you have for breakfast. Put us on?
No, and that's not just a sound check here at
it's a way of life.
It is a sanity check as well. And everyone needs a sanity check. Basically, I take a statin every other morning. And statin, these are these cholesterol drugs.
Well, it's the blood thing.
Yeah. And so I take the lowest.
It's your little bit of New York.
Is that it? Oh, Staten Island.
Oh, look at that. You got there.
All right. So
let me ask you something.
Indeed.
Do you have any Altoids on you?
I might. Why? Do you have, like, dog breath?
Yeah, dog breath. That's what I have. No, I need some kind of bite to keep me awake. I need some little tiny bit of pain.
Wait a minute. You've been off for like, what, 2 months?
I have been off for 2 months.
My last two Altoids.
I mean, these Quaaludes
are
so.
One of them looks like it has a bite out of it. Every once in a while, they're misshapen.
Quaaludes and Polaroid film. You know, people got some in their fridge, right?
Is that it? They long for the days of. Of course, if you saw the movie Wolf of Wall Street, he was a big fan of Quaaludes.
I've got that on my queue.
Oh, do you?
I do.
Okay, here's my question to you then. You know, it's a movie. It's a work of art.
Oh, no.
So I don't want to criticize it, but don't watch it with your teenage daughter.
I don't have a teenage daughter yet.
You don't, and your kids aren't old enough to really get
it. This sounds familiar, too. You watch a lot of movies with your teenage daughter that you shouldn't.
No, I
that came out a lot worse than I expected it to.
Reminded me of my binge watching of Shameless over the holidays. But
you like that William H. Macy? You like Bill Macy?
Shameless is it's riveting. It's a very good
What's that weird little high thing your voice is doing?
I'm still getting over bronchitis kind of thing.
Bronchitis? I thought you quit smoking.
No, I don't smoke, but I got something before the holiday break. And I will say this, it's messed up my stand-up comedy. I did a set at the Improv, actually. I went to their open mic.
The Atlanta Improv.
Yeah, and did 5 minutes there. It was a great, great thing. And I had a good set. But I can't do imitations.
Because the
So I had
the voice,
to do my metric system, the only people we've really reached with the metric system are drug dealers kind of thing, without doing the Mickey Mouse intro. I can't. You know, I'm opening for my good friend.
I think most of your intros are kind of Mickey Mouse.
Indeed, they are. I'm opening for my good friend Tim Lee on the 16th and 17th when he's here in Atlanta and North Carolina. And I want to do a bit about holidays, right? So for all of January, you get to do holiday jokes, right? And one of my holiday jokes is, you know, this is that time of year where everyone's thoughts turn to crass commercialism. And don't get me wrong, I understand this is what drives the economy, but I think they've gone too far with the It's a Wonderful Life Family Guy crossover. And I want to do, you know, Lionel Barrymore and...
Wait, does this mean you can't do your Stewie voice right now?
But of course, Stewie. No, Stewie's tough, but I can muddle through Stewie. But I can't do Jimmy Stewart, Lionel Barrymore, and Peter Griffin. And I certainly can't do Mickey Mouse because he's going to... I lose it. I just lose it. I can't go high. And for a while, for 2 weeks, I was basically, Luke, I am your father. I was Darth Vader for a while because it makes your voice go low.
You got to roll with it.
So hopefully by the 16th, I'll get my voice back and I can. But yeah, can you imagine that? And Stewie's in the, Mr. Potter, let him have it now. You know, stuff like that. And I'm still working on it. But I can't practice it because I can't do the voices. So
maybe someone's trying to tell you something.
No, I don't believe that, because whenever I do stand-up comedy, a lot of people will say, we think you should do more voices.
And, you know, anytime someone, especially you, Pete, is stopped from doing a Family Guy impression, an angel gets its wings.
Yes, there it is. That's the Christmas miracle, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I am going to be horribly honest and put myself out there for a little bit of ridicule right now.
Please,
I have
please
never
proceed.
Seen It's a Wonderful Life.
But I'm not going to ridicule you. Ridicule you.
Ridicule me? What?
Right.
Never seen it.
It's okay. When it first came out, it was not well received. It was not critically acclaimed. It's kind of a dorky movie.
The ridicule that I'm setting myself up for is I know that I've made the Angel Gets Its Wings joke more than once. I don't really know the context there.
Well,
I'm also not sure about the whole the bridge and the bank and Mr. Potter and all that stuff. I really don't know.
No, that's okay. It's irrelevant. I make references to movies I've never seen. I make jokes about the Claremont Lounge all the time.
Have you never
been? I have never been to the Claremont Lounge. Should
nice.
That be our New Year's resolution? We should go to the Claremont Lounge.
And watch It's a Wonderful Life.
At the same time.
Taking a laptop.
I mean, the Claremont Lounge. I believe David Tell called the Claremont Lounge. Comedian David Tell called it the best late night party spot around.
Lady Gaga referenced it on a Tonight Show appearance or something.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the Claremont Lounge is famous. Kevin Kline and Robert De Niro were in there.
For a movie?
No.
For
themselves. Taking pictures of each other, I think.
No, but I mean, you have to, as a nerd comedian, you have to make, well, from Atlanta, you have to make fun of the Claremont Lounge. You have to make fun of Dragon Con. And I made jokes about Dragon Con long before I ever went to Dragon Con or performed at Dragon Con. Now that I have a totally different view of Dragon Con. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah, totally. So we don't have to talk about Dragon Con again.
No, we don't. But that's okay. So you're a hypocrite and so am I.
Hypocrite?
We're starting off 2015
with a bang.
I've never told
anyone. All right, my mic is drooping again.
That's terrible.
This is a sign. It like slides into my groin.
Can you tighten up that nut there? Or the nut on the thing, yeah.
Is it just a nut tightening issue? No, I don't think it is. I think it's too much torque.
I find that a lot about life is a nut tightening
issue. All right, good for you. Well, so just to remind everyone, you're back after giving...
Did I make my point that I've never told anyone to watch It's a Wonderful Life? I'm not a hypocrite.
Oh, so you'd be a hypocrite.
Well, I'm just culturally inept.
I can live with that. But you're the humanities guy on this team here. I'm the one that's supposed to be culturally inept. You're supposed to be mathematically inept. Let's get the roles straight, shall we?
Let's go ahead and mix it up, man.
Okay.
Let's cross the roles.
Oh.
Let's be like the band James.
The band James?
That's right.
What is the band James?
I'm going to let that one go.
Okay. So.
Painted my eyes and called me pretty.
You've been off for how long? Like 2 months?
Ooh. November 7th. So, yeah, almost 2 months exactly.
And you took time
out because we're recording this on the 5th.
Yeah.
Yep.
And thanks for the folks who listened to some of the crap we put out there.
Yeah, we put a lot of stuff.
We're gone.
Did you hear the Xmas break? The Christmas break?
We
had almost enough in the can. We had one missing week.
Yeah, so I saw the one missing one.
I just did that as Christmas, so that was fun. Recorded that in the basement.
Oh, so there's actually something there. There's a link. I didn't click on it.
Should I click on it? There's something there. And I popped my peas in it just for you, Pete.
Thank you.
So I've been gone for 2 months. Yes.
Giving birth to twins.
Yeah, right.
And everyone's doing okay. You survived.
Everybody's,
you look okay. You don't look worse for wear.
Everybody's great. Yeah, actually, everybody's great. My wife and I were reminded last night that... this is the tough time, having kids. You know, my daughter was turning two at the end of last year, and a lot of the things that are really tough about having kids had started to pass. You know, she slept through the night. You know, she could talk to us.
They start to get a personality. They're actually quite fascinating.
Exactly.
Other than that, they're just drool machines before that.
And then we added these two babies to the mix. And two babies is tough, man.
But I will, for the record, point out to our listening audience that there is no spit up on your shirt. It's a little wrinkled, but you're looking okay.
Yeah, well, your clothes appear to be laundered
within the last week.
They were. I haven't ironed a shirt since my daughter was born, so
that's okay.
What are you going to do? And, yeah, Yeah, I made it out without any spit up, although that is not a common occurrence.
I have walked out of the house with spit up on my shirt. It happens.
Yeah,
it's occupational hazard. So that's good. You're surviving. And what have you learned from this experience that's relevant to the program?
Relevant to the program?
Or even if it's not relevant to the program.
Well, there's a lot of theories when it comes to how you should handle your babies. There's lots of complete systems that you're supposed to apply to how you raise your kids. And
are you feeding me a segue now?
I am.
Speaking of theories.
But it's also true.
I have a theory about theories.
There's books of...
That would make it a meta theory.
And you love a meta
I love that
prefix.
Word, meta. It just gets me all tingly.
Everybody has a way they think that they should raise their kids and that they think other kids should be raised. You can get books and books and books and books about...
Do you have any of the books?
Yeah, I mean, they've come through the house.
Are you a Spock, a Brazelton? Are they new guys?
No, I follow my wife's lead.
Yeah, Barry Brazelton was popular when my kids were born.
Yeah, no. My wife, Casey, stays on top of this stuff. She was a professional nanny for a long time.
Okay, and what are her theories about child rearing? Well, keep Charlie out of the mix and we should be okay.
The child rearing, I don't really know. It's mostly the getting them to sleep that's a thing. Getting the kids to sleep. That's really...
Alcohol or Benadryl?
You know, a nice left hook. You use the left...
Physical abuse.
Use the left so you don't hit them too hard.
Popular theory. Yeah. Right, just a disclaimer, he's only joking here, ladies and gentlemen. As far as I know, so I have plausible deniability.
So I did hand you a line, a segue, because look, there's only so much I can say about having kids. I don't know. I don't know. What the hell do I know?
It's a good point. Actually, I believe our lunchtime conversation, we were talking about pregnancy because one of my colleagues in chemical and biomolecular engineering, he and his wife are pregnant. And a lot of this, like, well, you shouldn't drink this. Or you shouldn't
with their
drink
second
coffee.
Child, right?
No, this is their first.
Oh, okay.
You shouldn't drink coffee. You shouldn't drink alcohol, all these sorts of things. We don't really know. There have not been large, long-term, longitudinal studies done on these things. I think it's reasonably safe to say that cigarette smoking is bad. Large amounts of drinking or drug abuse would be bad. But I don't think the occasional cup of coffee or even a small glass of wine is going to necessarily, you know, destroy your child. Now, if you get to the point of fetal alcohol syndrome where you're drinking a half a fifth a day or more, that's an issue. Same thing with exercise. His wife, who's pregnant, is an Atlanta roller derby girl.
Wow.
And she knows now she's
going to have to stop rolling.
She's halfway along, right?
Oh, yeah, so she's
in her. She doesn't do that because you could take a shot.
You could take a big hit.
So she doesn't do roller derby, but she still roller skates for exercise.
Yeah.
And I think the rule of thumb is, you know, exercise until it becomes a problem, and then you've exercised too much, and that's your body's feedback mechanism.
My wife was going to do Warrior Dash, and...
Warrior Dash?
It's like a 3-mile run with obstacles.
Where only warrior kings can participate.
Booyah!
How come you're not doing it?
Well, I did it. I'm saying that she wanted to do it, but she was pregnant. And it was, you know, the run probably would have been okay, but you climb a 30-foot wall. She's like, I just can't risk... If the worst happens, then the very worst could happen.
Right, you know? Exactly.
You'd probably be okay.
But. Right. So what is it, like a 5K otherwise?
I mean, 3 miles is that
5K? Oh, okay. No. Let me think. 6.1 is 10. 3.1 is 5. Yeah, so it's basically
5K. Look, you did the math, and I did not. Everything's fine. Everything's the way it ought to be.
The world, the universe is in order.
Everything rotates the way it should.
What was I watching last night? Some interview on Dateline, and there was some... woman who's being cyber stalked, and she found out that her stalker was right in her hometown. And she said, "Well, was this a relief or was this, troubling that you found out your stalker was in your hometown
as
opposed
around,
to?" And she said, "As opposed to millions of miles away."
Yeah,
I'm like, "What is that's halfway to the sun or something?" That I mean, the moon is only a quarter of a million.
You can
miles
blame
away.
Pop songs for that.
No, that's okay. And to me, when you are extemporaneously ad-libbing stuff on a podcast or radio or as a comedian, I can live with that. I don't think whoever this interviewer was is really that ignorant if she thought about it for a couple minutes. But still, we like to turn on people over the math. And that is the nature of our theories, right? So my theory on theories, my meta-theory, if you will, and we're already doing what we shouldn't do. We're using flowery language to exalt theories as an end as opposed to a means to an end.
Okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. So when you say theory, what do you mean?
I mean any sort of model to describe the way things behave. Sometimes it's very qualitative.
What's the difference between a model and a theory?
I don't think there's that much. I think we get into semantics like
different words.
If it's been around for a while, we call it a theory. If it's been around for a long, long time and everybody believes it and it's not controversial and nobody gives you a hard time, then we call it a law. you know, the first law of thermodynamics.
So why haven't we begun to call it the model of evolution?
Because evolution's been around for a long time.
But I'm saying
it is exalted
as a way to keep people from
theory
saying,
of
well,
evolution.
It's just a theory. It's like, no, it's a fucking model.
Right, but I mean, a model is simply just a description, right? I'm teaching a course this semester on modeling, and I'm trying to get more into the modeling of things, how you think about a model actually working. So
it just doesn't sound like there's any difference between theory and model.
No, I don't think there is.
Or law.
Yeah, I think it's no. I think it's really just your
so it could be the,
social perception of
how
that
science is perceived.
It could
be the theory of thermodynamics.
Yeah, you're right. And so we call it the theory of thermodynamics, but then we call the first, second, and third parts of it
call them
the
laws. And people love to use the laws of thermodynamics as some kind of metaphorical understanding of the human condition.
They do. And the whole idea of humanities folks, I think it was back in the early 70s, using physical theories to describe the nature of the human condition is something hopefully we're going to talk about next hour.
There was even a next half hour.
Next half hour.
We can't manage hours.
45
anymore.
Minutes. I don't know.
Short period of time. I mean,
short
like,
period of time.
This is almost done already. The theory of consilience of the podcast is that we just talk for a little while and then we stop it. Mm-hmm. We may not say anything, but we only do it for a little while.
Well, that's because I think
people
like
the French did a lot of theories like topological theories and mathematical theories and applying them to psychoanalysis.
And other humanities-based sorts of things.
Lacan, for instance.
All right.
I can't say his name correctly. L-A-C-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
Jacques Lacan. It's probably Lacan. You know, you swallow the N. Why are you looking at me like that?
What are you trying to order? Creme brulee at a bistro on the Seine?
Jacques Croissant.
But no.
he would have mathematical equations in his psychoanalytic texts.
Well, but so we're sort of getting into
petite a.
People want it borrowing from one theory and use it in another, which, by the way, is actually a very good thing. I see nothing wrong with taking quantitative ideas like driving force out of, you know, engineering and science and using them in humanities and sociology and economics.
I'm going to disagree with you right away.
Because you enjoy doing that
so
much. Yeah,
absolutely. But here's my example.
Okay.
I think it was just yesterday that I was foolishly reading a blog.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Actually, let me rephrase that. If you read a blog by an actual person. You know, don't read the political blogs that are...
Political talking heads are not people? That's what you're assuming?
No, they're not people. They're not people at all.
They are kind of weird.
No, I'm saying that as soon as journalism, web journalism, gets sort of corporatized, monetized even,
mm-hmm.
something starts to happen. Like, I used to read a lot of Alternet. I don't know if you know that one.
Mm, is this alternative internet?
Well, no.
Some blend?
It's like alternet.com or alter.net. Anyway, it's a news website,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty left-leaning.
Okay.
And it was over the past month that I was reading it, and I realized this is just Fox News.
On the other side.
On the other side. And that is not a false equivalence. There's a lot of folks who will say, oh, CNN, you know, it's as bad as Fox, just on the left. It's like, whoa, you clearly are not watching
I don't think it's
news.
As bad. But MSNBC leans a little more in that direction. And there are others that lean even more. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but... The particular thing is not so much the bias or the point of view. It's that hysterical exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think really makes Fox News, right? That's what makes it what people are so mad about.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
If they are not on its side, mm-hmm. or makes people such rabid supporters if they are on its side. Because mm-hmm. if you believe in it, if you are down with what they say, they give you a lot of ammunition and tools.
Yeah, they give you the talking points of the week.
Anyway, so what the hell? Oh, right. So I read a quote from one of our elected representatives, not Georgia, but somewhere, sometime. And they said, you know, we've got to fix government budgets. I have never seen anyone spend themselves into prosperity, which is fine as a actual anecdotal fact. And it's probably true that no one's ever spent themselves in prosperity. Mm-hmm. But the economy of a country is not a person, you know? There is no multiplying factor for spending for a person. You know, when you go and spend $10 on a meal, mm-hmm. you know, you're not creating more economic growth in your bank account.
Right, but the cumulative effect may do that to local
in a
and
country,
regional areas,
right?
Yeah, of the economy.
Just,
absolutely.
It does not connect. You know, mm-hmm. you can't say the government it has a credit card that they've run up. That's too simple. It's not a proper analogy. And so if you use a theory of personal finance mm-hmm. for...
That's right. You studied economics.
Ooh. Can we just keep that quiet?
Okay.
If you use a theory of personal finance to try and run a theory of,
of a global economy.
Of a sovereign economy, mm-hmm. say. Right? Don't do that. That's wrong. It's wrong mm-hmm. to do that. And and if you say, well, we'll take it sort of common sense or the larger metaphors, like that's even worse, mm-hmm. you know, to take this idea of how should a person handle their finances? Well, the government should handle their finances that way. It's like, no, absolutely not. That's not how that should work. So then that makes me think that when you say, well, we pull from other theories to apply them, like, aren't you going to run into that problem more than not?
Oh, yeah. No. Sometimes you pull from the inappropriate theory.
Pulling from inappropriate or pulling from disconnected.
Yeah.
Stuff that only metaphorically seems correct.
Right.
You know, and or seems to be poetic as opposed to useful. Like when somebody takes a complicated equation... Mm-hmm. And set like what's that quadratic equation? What's that for?
Well, let's pick the ideal gas law. PV equals nRT.
So
a very useful
if
theory.
You then say so, you know, the psychological reality of the pressure of trauma within a mm-hmm. person, right? PV nRT, and mm-hmm. so the pressure of trauma and the velocity of, you know, and you start making these sort of poetic allusions,
right? Analogies, metaphors,
right? Analogies, yeah. Suddenly what you're going to get is just a pile of bullshit.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes the metaphor is apt, though.
But, well, like, when? When would the metaphor be apt?
Well, let's take, for example, PV equals nRT basically says that at constant temperature...
And can you define apt?
Appropriate.
So why not just say appropriate?
Because apt is shorter, and I'm trying to...
Apt must mean, well, no, not...
I'm about to teach a programming
anymore.
Course. I'm like, well, that's only three characters, and it's one syllable. I can get away with that. Dun, dun, dun.
Even more so than appropriate, right? Apt. It's got to have some relevance. It's got to be useful. And it's also got to have that zing to actually, create some...
No, it does not have to have that
zing. If you're going to go outside, and, you know, this is a very not hard and fast rule. This is a very soft and slow rule. But if you're going to go outside your field, get the whole package. Don't just grab something. Like, so, in thinking about my polymer modeling, I've paid a lot of attention to The Godfather. As we can see in this one scene...
I haven't gone that far.
I'm just saying, you know, like, make sure it is apt.
Well, but I think if you think about it, P times V.
Because Clemenza could do that whole thing about the sauce.
Right.
That could be something about
pressure times
polymer
volume,
dynamics.
Right.
You know?
So pressure.
You bring it to a boil, right?
Okay.
Then you throw in, you fry up some sausage, whatever it is, a little sugar. And that's my trick. A little red wine.
Is this a Godfather reference now?
Have you not seen the movie?
Yes, this is one. Yes, I have seen the
movie. You've never seen The Godfather.
Is this when they were cooking in prison?
No.
The guy would slice the garlic with a razor.
Goodfellas.
Oh, that's Goodfellas.
You son
of
a bitch. You've never seen The Godfather.
I have seen The Godfather. But like, what, 20 years ago? I've seen The Godfather. I've seen all the Godfathers. But after about three, you don't really understand.
So you skipped Godfather 4?
Was there a Godfather 4? I don't think I've seen 4.
There was no 4. But the fact that you're not sure about that means that you haven't seen The Godfather.
Well, because, no, I have seen the original
one. I don't believe it.
Two words. Luca Brasi.
What does he do?
I just remember he got strangled. He was like one of the enforcers, right? Big, ugly,
you
dumb
read a
dude.
Synopsis on the internet,
no,
didn't you?
No, I saw
you?
The movie.
So what's this about the polymer?
No, we were talking about the ideal gas law. So think about it. Pressure and volume. If you were to think about
Enzo?
A metaphor. No, stop with The Godfather.
Polymers? Polymers for your father?
No. Pressure times volume is a constant.
Oh, I said velocity.
Right. So if you take volume and you decrease it, it increases the pressure.
And the N is small.
Yeah. But
temperature and what's R?
R is a constant.
Just a whose number? Did Avogadro come up with that number?
Actually,
did Bernoulli?
R is Boltzmann's constant in different units.
Why would it be R then? Just to get the PIV nert?
Because let's go back to consilience, because we learned about gases before Boltzmann invented statistical mechanics. Right?
Okay.
Sometimes we have theories
and
we realize,
legit.
Hey, this is just this, like this, and we realize they're the same. But we didn't realize that till years afterwards. But we could measure how volume and pressure changed when we changed temperature long before we understood the molecular theory of gases and statistical mechanics, which is what Ludwig Boltzmann pioneered. He ended his life by his own hand, though, so I don't like to use the Boltzmann constant because I'm like, well, that didn't end well for him. So I always remind my students when I teach them statistical mechanics of that fact. But here's the deal. Say you're working in an office or you're living in a home. It doesn't matter.
I do both of those things.
As you decrease the volume, right? Say, for example, you're putting 4 people to a hotel room. You're putting 2 people to a cubicle. You're doing
that. You're bringing home twins.
Right. So, right. Exactly. You're basically, yours would not be changing V. Yours would be changing N, the number of molecules in there. So at constant V, if you increase N and temperature's the same, pressure has to go up. Has pressure gone up at your house?
It has.
There you go.
Okay. You know what? I feel like you have succinctly something my argument. What's the word?
Summarized?
No, that's not it.
What is this? Today, Sesame Street is brought to you by random words that Charlie can't remember.
I'm a little tired. What's wrong with me? I can't come up with the word.
This looks like water, but it's actually a quart bottle of Red Bull.
Oh, I wish. Okay, that's a good counterexample to what I'm saying.
No, and some of them are bad, but some of them are good. And my view is is only as good as your ability to use it for something.
And the thing you just came up with is not very sexy. It's not very powerful.
Right.
You know, it's more funny than anything else. It's really just like, in somewhere pressure or volume has to go up. But the you know, temperature, what? If I bring down the air conditioning, if I lower the temperature in the house, will we all be more relaxed?
Well, but think about it. Understand what temperature is, temperature is the motion of the molecules. So, for example, if you were to add jobs or tasks, so you had to move and do things more and do it more rapidly, that temperature increasing would also increase the pressure if you were still at the same volume. So it makes perfect sense. The idea of energy of motion.
Yeah, but you
have
to examine these very carefully and really find the way that they relate.
You do.
It's not temperature like my thermostat's set to 69, set it to 67, and we'll all be a little more relaxed. Right.
Yeah, so it's much easier to make an inappropriate metaphor. But sometimes the biggest breakthroughs come from
very easy
to make an inappropriate one.
To make an inapt.
Is that a word?
And an inept metaphor.
Inept and inapt mean two different things.
Did you just say the same word twice?
No, apt and apt.
Upt and iped.
All right, but so let me go back to evolution. Here's my thing about evolution is people think it's just this theoretical construct.
People use the phrase, that's just a theory.
It's just a theory. And you know what they're implying by that? It has nothing to do with the difference between theory, law, and model. They're saying it's just a theory. It's not useful in my everyday life. And they could not be more wrong.
I'm not sure that that's what they're saying, though. I think they're saying that's just a theory. It might not be right.
But it is right because they use it every single day. Every time you eat cauliflower for dinner, you are using the theory of evolution. Booyah!
You will have to explain that.
And indeed I shall. Now, string theory might actually be a theory, right? Because that's something that is...
Well, I think when you hit multiverse, like that's a...
Multiple universes.
That's a theory in the colloquial sense in that... Yeah. If there's a way to test the multiverse theory,
we
I'd like you to tell me about it.
We struggle with testing many
there's
of the
no
issues.
There's no way
of
you can test the multiverse
We're
theory.
We're working on it, though, at the Large Hadron Collider and supersymmetry.
This
that
is
might
why
be related.
I think we should blow that thing up.
No. Baby steps.
Well, I think we should choke out all those scientists who are trying to test the multiverse theory.
They're my colleagues.
Send them to Siberia. Let them
but
think
about
their
But here's the thing
about
evolution, right? We can talk about evolution and say, well, I can believe counterexamples of evolution because it doesn't affect me.
Is there a counterexample to evolution?
Well, I guess that's creationism.
That's not a counterexample.
We don't want to believe evolution because...
It's a theory.
Many people are troubled with the fact that we might be related to bonobos and chimps and gorillas.
Are people still bothered by that?
And they're insulted by that. I think people are.
That feels so...
I think the chimps should be insulted.
That feels so 1800s.
Frankly. It does, but I think there are people that still have that view.
Chimpanzees only have 98% similarity.
I have a t-shirt that says 25% of our DNA is shared with a banana. Get over yourself.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, anybody who wants to... Wow. Yeah.
Right, and how we actually determine that similarity, that has a lot of assumptions.
And I want to make it clear that I just did my heh, because do I want to enter into a straw man argument about the theory of evolution here in this podcast?
But say, for example, you take...
We should bring in a creationist.
We should.
And have the fight.
But say you take evolution and genetics, and you simply look at, instead of natural selection, you look at artificial selection. That's called breeding. We've done that with horses, dogs, plants... Cabbage.
Hell, man.
Most of the cabbages, including derivatives what is it, cauliflower, we didn't have those hundreds of years ago or thousands of years ago. We bred those.
The finches.
We used evolution.
The finch beaks are what sell
me. So we can observe
it. Do you know about the finch beaks?
Yeah, I do. That's one of Darwin's examples that he used along with orchids and other flowers. But, for example—
In a generation, the average beak length changed.
But let's pick something you can relate to. Do you go to the Galapagos and look at tortoises and finches?
I would
finches?
Adore going to the Galapagos.
It would be good. But do you eat broccolini?
I have eaten broccolini.
I love broccolini. It's all the benefits of broccoli, which I love, but that's not that thick, chunky stalk, right? That's the broccolini.
So selective
broccolini
breeding.
Broccolini was artificially bred.
Right, okay.
They bred this stuff. So I see benefits of the theory of evolution and associated genetics all the time. And so to me, it's...
So how are people using the theory of evolution, if they're eating the broccolini? Aren't they just eating the broccolini?
No, but the people that breed it, the farmers...
Yeah, they're benefiting from
it. Yeah, they're benefiting. And some of these things, we actually will go in and artificially change the DNA. Many of the seeds that are created by companies that do these genetically modified seeds, they're a direct manipulation of the DNA, and they make them more resistant to a whole bunch of things. Now, we're also seeing some of the problems, right? If they're resistant to this, they might not be resistant to that.
Now, this is where we can actually get sued so easy there.
Well, I haven't mentioned Monsanto or any other corporation.
Is that a corporation? I've never heard of them.
They'd be a good sponsor for this program. No, and the point is, everyone wants to say, well, evolution is evil or Monsanto is evil. No, Monsanto's not evil. They're trying to take modern
didn't that guy
ideas
say
about evolution.
Evolution was an idea straight from the pit of hell.
That was Paul Brown, former congressional representative here in
Clark
Georgia.
County, yeah.
He also referred to embryology. But, I mean, come on, embryology, that's kind of important. We use that theory every day. You used that theory over the last 10 months, right?
See, here's the thing. I didn't use the theory, man.
But people used it
that
for your
just
benefit.
Happened.
They took ultrasounds of your
absolutely.
Children. They understand about embryonic development.
I'm just saying, I didn't use it. I was merely the recipient. I was the passive and stunned recipient of much of embryology.
But a stunned recipient of the massive benefits of that very practical theory.
I have no argument.
Finally, I have won.
Do you have a favorite theory?
Favorite? You make it sound like an ice cream flavor. Do I have a favorite theory?
This could be a personal thing.
I mean, I do like the ideal gaslight. I think it's actually very useful. to explain a lot of
things. We landed on that, and that's the one? Is it just because that's the last one you thought of?
No, I also like Bernoulli's equation.
One-night stands, aren't they?
Bernoulli's equation is a thing that says the faster moving something is, the less pressure. And it's easy to remember because I think of Atlanta traffic. The faster you're moving, the less pressure you feel you're under. The slower you're moving, the more pressure you're under.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
Recorded at the WREK studios on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
Those institutions support these views?
Probably not.
But they might
if they were drinking.